This is all you got. Good evening, family. I'm an addict. My name is Gina. I'd like to thank God. I've been clean all day today in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'd also very much like to thank the Rio Grande region for everything, for your fine hospitality, for Ronnie putting up with not being able to find me at times as I was moving. And it still sounds really weird to hear Gina S. from Brewster, New York. I still think I'm Gina B. from New York, New York, but we move on in life. And I have to tell you, I thought I had seen everything there was to see growing up on the streets of New York, but you guys got me today. I was taking a walk around the neighborhood, and a woman came up to me and said, "Burritos, $1. And she had them in her bag, and she was selling burritos out of her bag. So that was a new one, you know? You come and think that you've finally seen it all, and somebody gets you again. You know, I think back on my life and how I got here. And my addiction goes back to when I was a very small child, before I ever started using. I believe that the disease is within us and that the using and the substances are just a symptom. And I'm going to tell you a story, and I got to tell you, I don't know that it's true. A lot of what I talk about today, I don't always know that things really happened, or if you're the type of addict that I am, that you told stories so long for so many times that you really believe that they happened. But I can tell you that I know that these things happened because when I stopped using, this was the way that I felt, and the feelings were still there. When I was in elementary school, somebody used to walk around the class when they had a birthday party, and they used to drop invitations at everybody's desk, except for mine. When it was Valentine's Day, they used to bring everybody in the class a Valentine, except for me. When we used to go out at recess, I used to stand there and I used to wait to be asked to be picked, and I never was. And I can't tell you that it really happened exactly like that, but I can tell you that was how it felt. I always felt like everybody else knew how to live this life, and I never understood why. I just didn't get it. I was waiting for substances to come along, and they came when I was 11 years old. And unlike a lot of other people who say they never thought their addiction was going to take them where it did, I always knew my addiction was going to take me where it did, because for the first time, from the very first time that I used, I finally felt like I belonged. Everything I had been looking for my whole life, a crowd of people, something to, you know, do. We had a name in school, we were the Stonies. You know, I finally had a crowd, and my addiction took off real fast. At the same time that I started to use, I also heard that line that most every female has heard at one time or another, "If you love me, you'll do it." And I wanted to be loved more than anything, and I did it. And I went overnight from being a nobody in the school to being one of those girls that you wrote about on the bathroom wall. You see, the boys came by to take me out for one reason and one reason only. And they knew that they were going to get it, and they did. Because for 5 minutes, if I felt like you cared about me, it was worth it. And I didn't understand the difference between sex and love, and I didn't understand intimacy, and I didn't understand what it was that I was looking for. I wasn't ever going to get that way. You know, I hear people talk about sometimes that their best thinking got them to Narcotics Anonymous. I have to tell you, my best thinking never could have come up with a place like this. My best thinking at 15 years old was, why have you given it away for free for 4 years? You know, you can get paid for this. I thought that was a pretty sound business decision, so at 15 years old, I started tricking. I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous when I was 20. I didn't come here because I wanted to stop using. I didn't come here because I thought drugs were my problem. I came here very simply because I didn't have any place else left to go. This was the last stop on the block for me. And I need to remember who walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because, you know, sometimes when we've been here for a while, and I'll speak for myself, we tend to sit back and we tend to, you know, get a little bit arrogant and cocky, and, you know, and I hear us say things like, well, if that newcomer wants my phone number, you know, they need to show me that they want this program. They need to come and ask me for it. I have to tell you, I didn't have the self-esteem to ask you for your phone number. I was somebody who had been rejected my whole entire life. And I wasn't going to take a chance and ask you for your phone number and have you reject me again. And I will never forget the women who understood that and who saw that when I walked in these rooms and who walked up to me and gave me their phone numbers. And not only that, but they asked me for mine so that they could call me because they knew I wasn't going to pick up the phone. I did not have the self-esteem when I got here until I probably had 6 months clean. I wouldn't get up and cross the room and get a cup of coffee. You know, I walked in here broken, and I hope that I never forget who came in here. And it amazes me to think that I got clean when I was 20 years old because I was one of those people that they told that I wasn't going to see my 21st birthday, and I often wonder about that. You know what, by the grace of God this year, I'm going to be 40 years old. And I'm okay with telling you that I'm going to be 40. I never thought I would live this long, and it's a direct result of being in these rooms. When I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in April of 1983, NA was very new in New York. There were only two meetings in Manhattan where I was living. There was a Wednesday meeting and a Sunday meeting. And for anybody who's been to the greater New York region lately and seen the 1,200 meetings we have, that may sound pretty incredible to you. We had a core group of about 50, 60, 70 addicts who used to get together, and we used to ride the subways, and we used to make meetings, because Friday night the meeting was in the Bronx, and if you didn't want to go to the Bronx, that was fine, you could stay home. There wasn't another meeting to make. And I appreciate coming up in that time, because so often today we get caught up in the personalities, and you know, we don't want to go to that meeting because we don't like the people who are over there, or we stop going here because we get into something with people over there. You had to work your shit out. There wasn't any other place to go. There was one meeting a night, take it or leave it. I did nothing that you told me to do. I took no suggestions. I don't suggest to anybody you recover this way, but let me be honest. And you know, I try to be gentle on the newcomer today. When you walk in and you're sleeping with everything that crosses your path, you don't know any better. Don't talk about them. Don't drive them out of the rooms. Take them by the hand and show them the way and love them until they find another way. I did that. It was what I knew how to do. I stayed with the men. I came late. I left early. I sat in the back. And it came to me finally, after trying to get involved in a relationship, with 4.5 months clean. He had 87 days. And I always share that if you haven't quite figured this out, let me tell you that two sickos don't make a wello. And as much as I have tried through my years in here, I have found, unfortunately, that recovery is not sexually transmittable. So I get involved with this guy, and you know, let's be honest, we'll clean it up. We had a one-night stand, but you know how we get. About 2 o'clock in the morning, I started planning our wedding out. You know, I'm the kind of addict, you just smile at me and I'm picking furniture for the new house. And he got up the next day and he left, and I never saw him again. And man, I don't care how long you've been here, I don't care how many steps you got in your life, how much service you do, being rejected doesn't feel good. I made a conscious decision that I was going to go out and use. And I must have heard something that you said, because before I went, I picked up the phone and I called this other woman, and she suggested to me that I pray. I have a Jewish mother and an Italian Catholic father. So to tell you that I grew up just a little bit confused about God. And you know, I don't mean to knock anybody's religion, I really don't, but I remember being a little girl and my Italian Catholic grandmother would take me to Mass with her. And she would talk to me about a God who loved me no matter what, was always there for me, would be with me always, and would zap you for shit that you didn't even have to do. You just had to think about it, and it was a sin. So I didn't come in real high on God. But I knew that I was going out and I had nothing to lose. And I remember getting down on my knees and asking a God that I wasn't sure was there and I wasn't sure that I believed in if he would help me just hang on for another day. And I didn't use that time. And I'm very grateful that since April 25th, 1983, I haven't found a reason to use since. But what I did learn through that experience is that, you know what, I don't believe we work this program cafeteria style. I just don't believe you can take what you want and leave the rest. I believe our program is real simple. It's the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and you're either going to put them into your life or you're not. And what I needed was a sponsor who had these principles to help guide me through them. And of course, I started to look for a male sponsor. I didn't really feel I had a whole lot in common with you ladies. I looked at women and I thought to myself, you're catty, you're bitchy, you gossip, you talk about me behind my back, and you steal my old man in a hot second if I gave you the chance. Now, I did all those things to you women, which is why I thought you were going to do them to me. I mean, let's be honest. And I projected my feelings onto every female who crossed my path. But my recovery did not ever start to really take off until I learned how to be friends with the women in Narcotics Anonymous. And you have saved my ass on a continual basis, and I thank you for that. So this man in my home group heard what I was up to, and he pulled me over on the side and he said, Gina, if you want to learn about men's problems, go talk to men. But if you'd like to learn how to be a woman, you need another woman to teach you. Go get yourself a female sponsor. You know, I was with my sponsor for 16 years, and that woman who sponsored me took me by the hand, and she didn't start me off with steps, and she didn't start me off with slogans, and she didn't start me off with traditions. When we talk about being reduced to the animal level of living, that was how I walked into these rooms. She took me by the hand and she said to me things like, Gina, you need to start taking a shower, honey. Every day. You need to stop not washing your hair for a month and putting it up in a hat. You need to stop picking dirty clothes up off the floor and spraying perfume on yourself and putting makeup on and thinking you look like you got it going on. And I remember what came in here. And I see who I am today, and I have no doubt that it's a direct result of staying here. You know, as I continued on in this process, life continued to happen. And it didn't always go the way that I wanted it to. I got married when I had 3.5 years clean. I grew up in a single parent household and I married the daddy that I never had and always wanted. And I knew for a long time that I didn't want to be in that relationship anymore. And I didn't have the guts to leave until I had somebody else's bags packed sitting by the door ready to move in when he moved out. And I finally found a victim. And when I found a victim, I asked my husband to leave. I told him I wanted a divorce. And through the process of working these steps, it had become real apparent to me in an 11th step that God's will for me was to finally learn how to be by myself. I had put so much emphasis on my self-esteem being based on having somebody molded to my hip all the time. And God kept telling me, Gina, you need to learn to grow up and live alone. And I kept saying, yeah, that sounds good. Go tell somebody else. When I left my husband for that man, he promptly turned around and left me for somebody else. You see, I believe today that God's will be done. And the 11th step gives us a choice. And the choice is, do you want to accept it or do you want to take it kicking and screaming? But God's going to have his way. And for anybody who is struggling with that, and I hear a lot of us talk about it, I got to tell you, living alone started to be really wonderful. I finally had enough closet space. The toilet seat was always down. Nobody took the covers. And when I finally accepted that I was okay being alone, I met someone who came in a package that I never would have looked for. I had 9 years clean. He had 2.5. He had a year on the street and a year and a half behind the walls of New York State Prison. And for those of you who do H&I, I thank you. It works. He didn't have a job. He didn't have any money. He didn't look like a really good prospect. But what he had was something I'd been looking for my whole life. I found somebody for the first time who truly loved me for who I am and not in spite of me. I've been with this man almost 10 years, and I am proud to tell you that I have been monogamous for that entire time. And that may not impress you a whole lot, but I have to tell you, that impresses the shit out of me. It's taken me over 18 years clean to get 10 years of monogamy. In 1993, I found myself pregnant. And when I got over the shock of it, I started to get excited. I started to go to the doctor and I watched my belly swell and I heard the heartbeat on the stethoscope. And I went to the OB one day for a regular appointment, and he put the stethoscope on my stomach, and he kept moving it around and moving it around, and he finally pulled the plugs out of his ears, and he looked at me, and he shook his head, and he said to me, I'm sorry, the baby's dead. And you know, in a moment, my world shattered. I walked out in the parking lot of that doctor's office with my husband, and we held on to each other, and we just cried, and we cried. And he finally said to me, what do you want to do? And I said, please take me to the meeting. And you know, thank God that you have told me long enough in a program of repetition over and over again, when you don't know what else to do, pick yourself up and go to a meeting. If your ass falls off, put it in a bag and take it to the meeting, and somebody will help you put it back on, but go to the meeting. And you know, West Texas has a very special place in my heart, because I came home that night. And there's another region next door that had asked me to share about 2 years earlier, and I wasn't able to make it. I was working that weekend, and I said, if you ever think again, I'll be happy to come. And I came home that night from the meeting, and there was a message from that convention. You know, my sponsor always taught me about spiritual experiences, and the way that she explained it was that as long as we continue to stay in this process, our spirit continues to awaken. But a spiritual experience is that rare moment that we're allowed when you're in exactly the right place at the right time that you are supposed to be there, and you know exactly why your God put you there. And for anybody who's ever had that, the feeling that comes over you of being exactly where God has wanted you to be. And when I came home that day and I heard that message, I understood why I wasn't at that convention 2 years before. You see, it didn't make everything better and it didn't entirely take away the pain. But what it did was it reminded me that as long as I continued to stay in this process, that there were more miracles to come, there were more blessings if I just didn't give up 5 minutes before it happened. I never got pregnant again. And it was something that I struggled with for a long time in here. There's been nothing in my life that has made me feel more less than, more deficient, more damaged than not being able to conceive. I went through 4 years of infertility treatment. I had 3 in vitros, and in November of 99, the doctors told me it was time to stop. And I was so bitter and I was so angry, and no matter how much I prayed, I was bitter and I was angry, and it was so unfair. And I remember one time when my husband had gotten very sick and we thought he was going to die. They'd found a tumor on his lung. And I called a good friend of mine and she said to me, "What's the matter?" And I said, "David's going to die and it's not fair. I mean, I work steps and I sponsor women and I answer the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning and I don't deserve this." And she said, "Gina, get off the phone, get down on your hands and knees. Thank God that you've never gotten in life what you really deserved." And you know, through the whole time that I was feeling sorry for myself about never having children, and I tried to remember that I do thank God that I haven't gotten what I really deserved in life. And it finally took my sponsor, and she said to me, "Do you want to be pregnant or do you want to have a baby?" And I had to sit and think about it, and I realized that I was getting into a pissing contest with God once again, and I was losing. In February of 2000, we made the decision that we were open-minded to adoption. And I went to see a lawyer and he told me it would be a year and a half. And I came home and I threw the papers on the table and I said, "Great, another dead end, thanks." I'm going to get real specific with some details, which I don't normally do, to try to follow you along. That week that we went to see the lawyer, there was an ad in the paper about this land auction that was going on. Why I need land, I have no idea. My husband decided it. He thought it was going to be a fun thing to do. So we end up at this land auction, and I got to tell you, we walk in there, and the first thing they're asking for is our certified check, which of course we don't have. But you know how we get. "Oh yeah, I'm sure. It didn't say you need a certified check. All your friends probably have a certified check. This whole thing is rigged, isn't it?" Making a scene, and of course the gentleman says, "Please, we'll be happy to take your check. No problem. Just shut up, lady. You know, go inside." Now, mind you, I'm not even going to buy anything. I don't even know why I'm here. So the bidding starts and they sell these 2 parcels of land, and the next thing I know I see my husband raising his hand and I'm like, "What the hell are you doing?" And he's telling me, "Shush." Now we don't have any money. And I'm watching him. And he raises his hand 3 times and the next thing you know I own 5.1 acres in nowhere and I owe $100,000. About 2 weeks later, we go to a speaker jam in Jersey. My worst character defect is procrastination. I never tell anybody where I'm supposed to be going until the last minute. So my husband bought a chalkboard, and we are supposed to write down all of our commitments, so now I just don't write them down. So this one Saturday, he was working, and he comes home about 5 o'clock, and I said to him, "I'm supposed to be in Jersey in an hour." He said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, I'm speaking at this speaker jam. I'm supposed to be in Jersey in an hour." "God damn it, why can't you ever write anything on the board? We're going down the Garden State Parkway," and he is cussing me the whole way about it. We get to the speaker jam, and he is livid, and it's hot. They got a basketball tournament. They're doing a fish fry. They're giving out tournament championship, you know, awards, trophies. Thank you. nobody's interested in listening to me share. We get into the meeting and there's no microphone. People are tired, they're hot, they can't hear. They're walking out in droves. I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I doing here? And at the end of that meeting, a man that I have never seen before and whom I have never seen since, and I have to tell you, I'm not even sure he's a real person. I think God just sent an angel that day. He walked up to my husband after the meeting and he said, there's a young addict in our area who's just getting clean. She's 17 and she's pregnant and she's looking to place the baby. Can I hook the two of you up together? And if you've seen me this weekend at all with a stroller, my son Connor will be 18 months old this week. We ended up taking a loan off of our 401k. Somehow we managed to scramble and get the money to close on that property. And 6 weeks later, we turned around and sold it for all of the birth, parent, and lawyer expenses. If you think that I could have ever planned it, if you think if I had my hand in it, that I ever could have worked things out to a T that well. And I am so grateful to this young addict, and I will never, ever forget the love that she had for this child that she never even saw, that she loved him enough to give him a shot at a life that she couldn't offer him. And in the meantime, gave me the opportunity to be a mother. This is one thing that I want to talk about just because it's really changed me. You know, in recovery and relapse, we talk about that jarring experience, you know, changes our perspective on things. I always share about don't work the steps, live the steps. This isn't a program that we intellectualize. I was so good at that for so long. I sat in these rooms, I took key tags, I took birthday cakes, I sponsored a whole bunch of women. I could talk the basic text up and down, I could talk the steps and traditions up and down, and I never internalized the principles. I shared clean, I lived dirty, and I didn't understand why at 5 years clean I wanted to blow my brains out. And I finally started to understand that the principles had to come from the inside out. And I thought that I had done a pretty good job of it until 6 months ago. It was a late summer morning in New York, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Sky was blue, there wasn't a cloud anywhere. And I got a call from my sister-in-law telling me that a plane had flown into the World Trade Center. I walked over to the window, and I was standing there, and I could see the first tower burning. And as I stood there watching, I watched a second plane come around and hit the second tower. And I was standing with about a dozen people, and as we watched the second plane hit, all of a sudden, we realized that we were under attack. I work in a building that prior to 9/11 was number 6 on the Joint Anti-Terrorism Task Force list. My building is over Grand Central Station. So there's a lot of cause for mischief. As we stood there kind of numb, all of a sudden, one of the senior executives burst onto the floor and started to yell at us to evacuate, evacuate, everybody get down. And we went running out into the street, and there were people screaming, and there were people crying, and the smell of gas was everywhere. And I just kept praying, please God, let me get home to this little boy who's got his first birthday in 8 days. Please let me make it home. Please let me get out of Manhattan. Let me get out of this city alive. Up until that day, I really thought I understood just for today. I really thought I understood live for the moment. I really thought that I understood tomorrow isn't promised. After that day, I have to tell you, I finally started to internalize what it means to be grateful just for today and to understand that tomorrow isn't promised. It was the most terrifying experience that I have ever lived through in my entire life. And I am so grateful to be alive. And since that day, whenever I start complaining about petty little shit, all of my luxury problems, all I remember is that there's 3,000 people in my city who didn't get home that day. And all of a sudden, everything isn't quite so important anymore. You know, for anybody who doesn't know why they're here, I have to tell you, I don't believe that the normal people in the world, whoever they are, wake up in the morning and say, you know what? I think I'm going to go to an NA meeting today. If you're here and you have no clue why, may I suggest that you give it 90 days? If you don't like what we have to offer, you can pick your misery back up at the door on your way out. Everything that I ever needed to stay clean, I heard at my very first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. You told me real simply, don't use no matter what, join a group, get a sponsor, come early, leave late, get involved, and something that I don't hear too much anymore, but that they used to say in the beginning was, work the steps or die, motherfucker. My life today has gone beyond my wildest dreams, and when I hear Brewster, New York, it throws me off. I mean, for Connor's sake, my son, we moved out of the city 4 months ago. I am so urban, it flips me out. This may not... I live about 50 miles north of the city now. I have an acre of property. I got deer in the backyard, and I drink water out of a well. And I love it. And I come home at night, and I step outside, and I look at the stars, and there's a feeling of peace in God that I can see out there, that I am so grateful for that. And you know what? That isn't what I got clean for. I didn't get clean for the job, and I didn't get clean for the house, and I didn't get clean for the relationship. I don't honestly know what I got clean for, because when I came here and you asked me, do you want what we have to offer? Honestly, what I asked you is, what do you have to offer? Let me know, and I'll let you know if I want it. But the greatest gift of recovery that I have, that I don't know quite how to put into words, has been the ability to live comfortably inside of my own skin and be okay every day with who I am. And I never ever thought that I would find a place in the world where being me felt okay. I have my husband today, I have my son, but my first priority from day one is always, don't use and make a meeting. And if I just do that simple thing, everything else falls into place. I always share this because I get a kick out of it. A couple of years ago, I made vice president on my job. And I was sitting across from my boss when he gave me my promotion, and he let me know I'd been promoted to vice president, and I'm sitting there and I'm grinning at him. And he's looking at me, and I mean, he thinks I'm crazy anyway. But all I was laughing at to myself was, do you have any idea who I am? Do you have any clue of the things that I have done in my life? But you know what? The truth is, he doesn't. Because you have allowed me the opportunity to come all the way back and to be a responsible, acceptable, and productive member of this society. That he has no idea who I am and what I've done. And you know what? For somebody who walked in these rooms capable of earning money in two positions, and let's be honest, on my knees or on my back, I have been allowed to come all the way back into life. And I never ever thought that I would enjoy the life that I have today, but I paid dearly for my seat. And just for today, I'm not giving it up. I am very proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm proud of my new home group, Miracles Under the Stars of the Danbury area of Connecticut region. And I moved far enough into the woods in New York that we have to go to Connecticut for meetings. But if you ever get by there, please come. Wednesday nights, we're a step tradition meeting, and it works how and why. Dynamite meeting. Best damn home group in NA. Don't think yours is the best damn home group? Make it the best damn home group. There was once upon a time when I used to believe if your home group wasn't the best one that you needed a new one, but you know what? I've come to understand if you aren't part of the solution, then you're a part of the problem, so make it the best home group. I think sometimes when your mind goes blank that God tells you that you've given all that you got and it's time to be quiet, and I'm okay with that today. So I just want to thank you again for having me. Thank you for all of your hospitality. Thank you for setting my stomach afire after 2 days of burritos. And if nobody else has told you that they love you today, let me tell you, it is, according to this watch, 2:09. And if there hasn't been anybody who tell you that they love you by now, you need some new friends. But in case you're still hanging out with the old ones, from the bottom of my heart, I love you and God loves you also. And if anybody asks you how NA works, you let them know it works just fine. Thank you. Have a great convention.